Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
There is one rule change that clearly did not work, so it may be dismissed. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday. And have you seen, started picking up steam over the weekend, the Saban rule may be rescinded. Do you know what the Saban rule is? Well, there are several either rules that have said here are some specific parameters you have to follow, or there have been rules that say you can't do fill in the blank. So there's two types. Here's what you can do. Here's what you are prohibited from doing. There are a lot of different either issues that have been addressed by the NCAA or the SEC or whomever else that have been labeled as, it's a Saban rule or the Saban rule. Most notably, the Saban rule was the bump rule. That if you bump into a recruit on a high school campus, it's defined. Dan, was it 30 seconds? You can greet the recruit, you can give a salutation, but you have 30 seconds to part.
Yeah, it's get in, get out.
Yeah, you've got, and that's, oh, I just bumped into you. Because, now again, I don't know this, never been with Nick Saban on a recruiting trip. A lot of folks would say, Nick Saban just happens to bump into a heck of a lot more recruits than most coaches. Now, there are a lot of things that Nick Saban just happens to do a lot more than other coaches. I had mentioned this before. When he had been back at Alabama, or back in the SEC, it was maybe, I don't know, like after 5 years or so, 6 years, that's when a lot of attention went to Nick Saban's roster management. And he was making use of the medical hardship where a kid who was on scholarship, you got 85 of them like everybody, and a kid who's on scholarship, well, he's hurt. Well, he can't play. We should be able to replace somebody on the roster. We'll keep the kid on scholarship, free schooling. We're not going to kick him out. He's just not going to play anymore. So if he can't play, he shouldn't count. Not towards our limit. We're going to pay for an extra scholarship, so let us have more people on scholarship. Whatever the time frame was, the first maybe 5 years he was in Tuscaloosa, I believe the number was Alabama had 12 medical hardships. Everybody else in the SEC combined had like 11. So you're 10 times more likely to have some sort of career-ending injury. Or your head coach is actually looking to reshape a roster with a bunch of kids who might not have needed to be on scholarship at a place like Alabama. Not if they're going to win titles. So there are other things that have been labeled the Saban rule. But for the most part, it has to do with recruiting, and it was a limitation that was added, oh gosh, I want to say, I don't know, 2010 maybe. And this actually hurt some guys getting hired. There were additional limitations placed on the head coach's ability to recruit on the road, especially spring evaluation period. And it was specifically put there because of Nick Saban. Nick Saban at the time had a quote, some guys don't like to recruit. Some guys don't like to put out the effort. He said, I like having relationships with people. And so Nick Saban was just out there out hustling everyone. So the NCAA and a lot of the coaches in the Coaches Association, hey, we need to change things. We've got everybody trying to outwork everybody, so at least let's draw this back a little bit. And so more dead periods and whatever, where go home and be with your family for 4 days, things like that. That was how it was presented. And it was accurate to present it that way because that's what was happening. 363 days a year, I'm recruiting. Well, the Saban rule, which, among other things, limited the head coach's ability to recruit off campus. I think it limited, like, he had one in-home visit maybe. But you're not going to campus and to the high school campus during spring and et cetera. Well, obviously, that rule didn't work. Because if you put that rule in 10 years ago, and over the last 10 years, can you guess? And I'll let you. Can you guess where Alabama's average finish in nationally ranked recruiting classes has been over the past 10 years since the Saban rule went into effect? Do you know? Like 2.7. Anybody here a golf fan? Dan, are you a golf fan?
Massive.
Okay, so you remember when that young hot shot from Stanford was tearing up the world's most prestigious golf course, folks in Augusta were like, hey, we're going to move this tree, install a bunker, lengthen the fairways. Do you remember the phrase? We're going to
tiger-proof it.
We're going to tiger-proof it. Tiger showed up and went, ha, ha, ah, I hit it longer than anybody, and you made it longer. It was guys like Steve Pate going, it already took me an extra shot to get to the green. Now it's an extra shot and a half. They were going to tiger-proof the course by, I don't know, putting in a windmill and a dinosaur and a clown mouth. And Tiger was like, all right, game on. And he ripped it up even more. Honestly, and I will tell you, I thought of something, and I was like, I ain't doing the work because I don't care. I don't know what Saban's average recruiting classes at LSU were, and I had access to it, and I could go back and find it. Irrelevant. Didn't care. I cared about what was going on at Alabama after the Saban rule was passed. Hey, this guy's shown up and is making a mockery of everybody in the SEC already. We got to turn the tables on him. No more recruiting like you've been doing, Nick Saban. We'll bring you back down. Nick Saban's like, mm-hmm. Just tell me whatever the rules are. And I am going to find a way for Alabama to finish first, second, or in a horrid car crash offseason, third in recruiting. Show me what the rules are. All right, early signing period. All right, show me what the early signing period calendar looks like. 13-month dead period. Okay, show me that calendar. It doesn't matter how they try to put their thumb on the scale, whether it's the NCAA, the conference, other coaches, anyone. They passed a rule known as, it's like Dan said, they were going to tiger. Augusta National was like, and we've made enhancements and crowd experience. And I was like, no, they are going to what? Tiger-proof it. They put his name on it. The Saban rule. Folks, Saban rule didn't work. And so now there is conversation that the NCAA may rescind it. When I said it had, actually, I'm not going to say maybe it hurt guys. I don't know. It made certain coaches not as valuable as they would have been. Chuck, what are you saying? I'm saying that assistant coaches, coordinators even, who were thought of as these ace recruiters, it was a little harder for them to get hired because if you were going to pick whoever you want, just ace recruiter across the nation. Tim Brewster. And he's been a head coach, I think. Was he a head coach at Minnesota? Tim Brewster, tremendous recruiter. If you hired him as a head coach, you immediately dialed down a large part of what makes him so valuable to a college football program. Now, he could still recruit on campus. And again, if I had the recruiting rule right, I think he got one in-home visit as the head coach, I think. But it was some severe restrictions. And I talked about that's why, like, Will Muschamp was one of the last coaches in waiting. Jimbo Fisher was a coach in waiting. Remember James Franklin back at Maryland, coach in waiting. And the NCAA announced, all right, anybody else who gets declared coach in waiting, beginning right now, you also have those restrictions. What? So now the head coach and our hotshot young assistant?
Uh-huh.
Well, look, what if we don't really intend to make him coach? We just want to keep him here versus bolting to another program. You know, Jimbo Fisher, what did he have, that $5 million? We're going to make you coach in waiting, and if you don't get to be head coach in this front time frame, what, 3 years or something, we owe you $5 million. So there were carrots out there, and then the NCAA said, yeah, we're going to treat you just like the head coach. Oh. You can still name somebody coach in waiting. No one does it anymore because of this. So according to I read this from 24/7 Sports first. It's in a lot of places now. But the Saban rule, there is a chance that it will be rescinded and that head coaches will now have a lot more freedom, actually the same freedom as the assistant coaches, to get out and do what they do on the road. So, you know, you got to be of some level of import to get a rule named after you. You know, what is it, the Larry Bird exemption? For
bird rights.
Yeah, bird rights. That's a good thing, bird rights. I don't know, Tommy John surgery? If his elbow would have rotted off, I don't think that it would be Tommy John surgery. It would be whoever performed at surgery. Was that Frank Job? But Tommy John surgery, it was a success, and he wound up pitching another 15 years in the big. So you know what? Heck yeah, name it after me. The Saban rule? Yeah, I was whipping everybody so bad in recruiting, they had to pass a rule to stop me. And you know how we responded? By finishing even higher in recruiting. You know what Augusta National did a few years after they tiger-proofed the course? They took some of those trees out, and they moved the bunker back, and they changed the – they put it back how it was in a lot of cases. They're like, yeah, that didn't really work. NCAA, they're considering the same sort of thing. Yeah, that didn't really work.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
To play at the high school program he played at, to go to USC and start as a, really started as a high school senior. So you can't not be a leader and do that. And, he's taking more of a vocal role, you know, even with our team, and commands the offense, understands the offense, and does a good job leading that unit.
Was that team modern day? They got the Michigan helmets, right? I think they're red and white. Maybe they're black and gold. It's one of the teams Marinovich played for, maybe. That is Kirby Smart talking about his quarterback, JT Daniels, and modern day is one of the it's the most accomplished and really more famous high school programs in America, and the fact that it's out in California, and it is in particular known for quarterbacks. I mean, that's as great a state as there is for high school football, and in particular quarterbacks, and that's where JT Daniels was until he did the Jake Bentley thing, early enrollee, and like his entire senior year, he's starting at Southern Cal as an NCAA true freshman. So first half, and this was one of the weirdest things ever. I told the story earlier during the season, actually, that I want to say it would have had to been 19, the opener in 2019 against Fresno. It was after the entire day of football, and I'm watching this game. And at halftime, I was like, "All right, I'll DVR it and I'll go to bed," because I was just beat. And so I see the first half, and I see him get hurt, but I don't realize he's hurt. No, I see him get hit. But I don't realize he's hurt. And then I realize he's hurt later. Keaton Slovis starts playing. Well, that was the end for JT Daniels out there. But he played a lot of football out there, had a lot of turnovers, but he was a high school senior playing in the Pac-12, starting in the Pac-12. That kid is some kind of talented. And with even George Pickens, who my prediction is he doesn't play for Georgia anymore. I think his focus, and rock on, George, I think his focus is going to be the NFL draft in April a year from now. They're still, man, they just got stud receivers, very talented kids, only a couple of them proven. but just so many talented kids out on the perimeter. They're, even without George Pickens, I've said their regular season doesn't have to be wrecked. And a lot of it is because the right arm of JT Daniels, just a really, really talented kid that's if Todd Monken calls the plays Todd Monken wants to this year, then that offense should be able to light it up. It would honestly be the first. Think about this, folks. They now have put multiple guys in the NFL since Aaron Murray. This would be the first consistent downfield, pressure the ball, downfield quarterback you've had since Aaron Murray. You didn't have that with Grayson Lambert. You know you didn't. You didn't have it with Jacob Eason. He was a freshman. You didn't have it with Jake Fromm. They didn't push the ball downfield. This is the first quarterback you've had who you have confidence can consistently pressure the defense over the top since Aaron Murray. And a program like Georgia, who's had NFL quarterbacks since then, it's just really a mystery. Dan, what up?
Well, and the other part of it as well is the dead giveaway for your point is Kirby Smart the other day when talking about what they work on during the scrimmages, saying we want to be a downfield vertical passing game. And it was one of those, Chuck, where if you ever listen to any press conference or any type of audio, sometimes there's that bit of audio that you hear and you're like, I'm not really sure I heard that. Let me go back and listen to that again. And sure enough, Kirby Smart saying we want to be a downfield vertical passing game.
I don't believe that.
Well, exactly. I mean, we will see what happens. Only time will tell. Chuck, this week there is a chance for at least one part of college football to be followed up by there was much rejoicing, and that is the dead period is expected to elapse and end on May 31st. Yeah. So that means that on-campus recruiting can happen again. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that coaches can then start going back out on the road at a certain point too. So that is something else that I think for the most part, coaches, they've now – we all know that coaches are people of habit, and once the routine is set, it's hard to break that. I think that's going to be the biggest adjustment now for any of these guys is that they, for the better part of the last year, year and a half, have had to learn about how to recruit through a computer screen or through a phone screen, as opposed to now, hey, you're on the road, you're flying over to Dallas, Texas to go look at that linebacker, you're going over to Chandler, Arizona to talk to this tight end, and being out on the road is going to be a little bit of an adjustment. And I think that of all the things recruiting-wise, that's going to be the one for a while that coaches are going to be like, I need to do this again?
I think it's going to be there are a lot of businesses that over the last year, the employees have been told, you need to do a little more and maybe even do a little more for a little less. But you need to do a little more. And I think that all of the not advancements, because in the moment you were just looking for anything that you were allowed to do, but all of the additional ways, the methods that the programs have recruited with over the past 13 months. They're going to go back to exactly what they were doing before, same playbook, and add parts of the digital world that were forced upon them over the last year plus. So, they're not going to be going away from it. They're going to be retaining some of what really worked, and it's just going to create a lot more work for everybody involved because they were forced to learn new avenues to communicate.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
So if we DeLorean back about 7 days, we're going to have a good friend of mine on, Ingram Smith, to talk about FSU. And I was texting him before. I was like, hey, I'm thinking I'm going to, you know, ask you about this, this, and this. And, of course, I said Mackenzie Milton and, you know, how he's doing as he kind of gets back into the flow. And the only response I got was, yeah, about that. And so then we talked to Ingram a little later, and he said, Chuck, right now this is Jordan Travis's job. And he said, honestly, if there was a game today, I don't know that Mackenzie Milton would be the backup. It just was not happening for him in practice. And that was disappointing from a personal standpoint because everything – I mean, folks, it could have gone another way after that injury. I don't even – like, it's bad juju. I don't even want to say the words. Speak things into existence. No, thank you. It could have gone another way. I'll leave it at that. And this kid's back playing football. I was wondering about his ability to get back and start at a Power 5 program, heritage place like Tallahassee, and it appeared it was a little bit too much. Well, God bless Mackenzie Milton, because he came out on Saturday and he had to wait a minute, but he got some good things done for a firsthand report, because it was open. Limited crowd, but it was open. Some of the practices had been opened as well. Want to welcome on from warchant.com. He is the editor. It's Ira Schoffel. Ira, how are you today?
I'm great, Chuck. How are you?
Doing all right. Get us up to speed with Mackenzie Milton, because if he's not a practice player, he turned into a game player on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, I think it's been – I think a lot of us, you know, had to recalibrate, you know, how we were going to evaluate him early on in camp, because, as you said, practices probably about half the practices and all the scrimmages were open. And, you know, I think a lot of us, like myself, I was guilty as anybody – just assume, because we had seen him play 2 years ago, that, you know, if he was healthy and he was cleared to play, then you'd see that Mackenzie Milton. But what we saw early in camp was, you know, what should have been obvious to all of us, that he's learning a new offense and he hasn't really played in over 2 years. So there's going to be some rust. There's going to be some growing pains there. And that was evident early on. He didn't seem comfortable in the offense. He didn't seem comfortable with the timing with the receivers. He didn't look like the same guy from his UCF days. But I think the last week or week and a half, you started to see it starting to come around a little bit. The last scrimmage that was open about 2 weeks ago, you started to see it. He made a couple of really nice throws, improvised a little bit. And Mike Norvell said you could tell he was starting to make the reads, not always in the right order, but he at least knew where guys were supposed to be. And then, as you said, in the spring game, he really showed up. And it was big for him, because it was the first chance for most fans at FSU to get to see him.
Yeah.
If they had seen what he looked like in the first 2 weeks, I think they would have been really disappointed. But now I think most people feel like, okay, there is a real quarterback competition.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about Jordan Travis as well. But one of the big plays is funny. I asked a buddy of mine who covers the program back after the February signing day. I was looking at the early enrollees, and there's only a handful of them from high school. And I said, if any of the high school early, and he's cut me off, he said Malik McLean. He said, ball player, ball player, ball player. I was like, all right. Showed himself to be a ball player a little bit on Saturday.
Yeah, he did. He's had a really good spring. He started off with a bang the first week or two, really impressive. Then I think he hit a little bit of a freshman wall, you know, when they started adding more install midway through camp. He had a couple of rough days, but yeah, he was really impressive. Had a couple of really nice catches, showed his speed. He's a big, strong kid. As a true freshman, he looks like he's a guy that's really going to be able to contribute as a freshman, and they need it because they're not very good at wide receiver.
And Brian Robinson got some run, too, coming off a redshirt. Well, everybody's coming off a redshirt year, but as well, another big one on the perimeter.
Yeah, and he's a guy that, you know, coming off the bus, looks the part. I mean, when he signed, people expected him to do things right away. Didn't do much last fall. In spring, he's been kind of hot and cold. But, yeah, you're right. He made a nice diving catch on one of those Mackenzie Milton passes for a touchdown in the spring game. And the potential's there. There's no question. He's just got to become more consistent. We've seen him at practice not do a great job of winning those 50-50 balls. But there's no doubt he looks the part.
And so for everybody who wasn't there, it was a scrimmage, which we always talk about, Ira. I was like, folks, we call it the spring game. It's just the 15th session to the coaches. And that for most of them, they want it to be as close to a practice because they think they can get some stuff done in practice. And so most of this was a scrimmage. What about Jordan Travis and his performance?
I thought he looked good, like he has all spring. He really, you know, he had three drives. They each had Mackenzie and Jordan each had three drives with the first team offense against the first team defense, and they both put up the exact same results. They each had a touchdown, a field goal drive, and a drive that didn't end up in points. But Jordan looked good. I mean, he's looked good all spring. He's throwing with more confidence. You know, he's got a better understanding of the offense. You know, he was really shorthanded, or, you know, kind of behind the eight ball last season, because not only were they learning a new offense under Mike Norvell and they didn't have the spring, but then he was injured for most of preseason camp. So then he gets out there in games and it's just kind of like, hey man, go make plays. Well, now he understands the offense. You've seen him throw with more confidence, and you know, I think he's still the front runner for the job, and I think he can do a good – I think he'll be a better player than we saw last year, but Mackenzie will challenge him.
One of my favorite kids that's portaled in the past years, year and a half or so, Jayshon Corbin, obviously going back home to the state of Florida. And he got involved in the – he caught the ball a little bit, got some carries. There's a real – there's a real blue sky for that whole running back room. We've talked about this before, but in addition to whoever they brought in, you know, through the traditional means, three grown men in that room already with Corbin and the transfer from Auburn and then also Toafili coming back.
Yeah, it's a nice group, and you're right. Those three guys are the main guys, and Jayshon Corbin is kind of he's kind of the every down guy. He's very good in pass protection. He can carry the ball. He's not super dynamic like Lawrence Toafili, who you mentioned. Toafili averaged 9 yards a carry last year, but you know had a little bit of a hard time staying healthy. But he's the home run threat. Kit Corbin's done a really good job. He's even run the Wildcat. He's kind of a mixture. He can run short yardage, but he also has some ability to make some decent-sized plays. And then DJ Williams, who came in from Auburn, is a load. He's a kind of low center of gravity guy, short yardage guy, but can also catch the ball out of the backfield. David Johnson, who's the recruiting coordinator and running backs coach, I think he's done a really nice job getting that room together.
All I want to ask you, I mean, we talk every time about the O-line, and I've gone on record, they weren't horrible last year, and that was a pretty big step up. Is there any individual that, like, as of Saturday night, the coaches said, hey, wait a minute, we may have a ball player that maybe they didn't think that 34 days earlier?
That's a good question. I don't know that I would say that. I thought Darius Washington, the left tackle, you know, really got pushed into playing time early. He played a little bit 2 years ago as a true freshman, then started for most of last year as a redshirt freshman. But he's never had a spring. He's never had an off season where he could actually work out. He's always said he's had some shoulder injuries, and he hasn't been able to kind of, you know, put on that strength and size. And he has this off season. I thought he had a pretty good day overall. He had a couple plays where he got beat, but overall a pretty good day. The offensive line that we saw in the spring game is not what we're going to see in the fall, though, because they had a couple guys out, and then they also still plan to bring in another grad transfer. They'll end up having probably eight transfers on this team from other Division I schools, mostly grad transfers. And the plan is to get one more offensive tackle this offseason.
Flip it over to defense quickly, Ira, if you got a few more minutes. Jermaine Johnson, you mentioned with one of your Brian Robinson, I think. He looks the part. Jermaine Johnson looks the part, like the part of an MMA fighter. and he's like, I just want to go somewhere and play. I need to play more. If I play more, I'm confident I can produce. Seminole fans got to look at him on Saturday.
Yeah, man, he's really impressive. He has been at every practice we've been at. And it really tells you that, you know, where Florida State is from a talent standpoint. The fact that, you know, he was a guy that was a situational pass rusher for Georgia, a nice player, had 4 or 5 sacks, you know, was a legitimate part of that Georgia defense, which is, you know, filled with NFL guys. And he comes to Florida State, and he is going to be the bell cow for that defense. He looks like the best player on the field. And, you know, they haven't had a pass rusher like him. It's only been a few years, but since Brian Burns. And you know, we all know that can make your entire defense look a lot better if you can actually have somebody that affects the quarterback.
Who is the – if it's not Johnson, who's the best pass rusher on that squad?
Man, there ain't a lot. There really isn't. They've got some young guys. You know, Derek McClendon is a guy that they're hopeful for. Quayshon Fuller, but none of them have been consistent. I mean, really, it's going to be him. They also brought in Keir Thomas from South Carolina. He wasn't available in the spring. He'll be there in the fall. But he's more of a kind of a run stuffer defensive lineman. He can make plays in the backfield, but he's not an elite pass rusher. So it's really Jermaine Johnson and then a bunch of guys that, you know, might try to clean up his mess.
All right, last thing I want to ask you, and you and I never talk a whole lot of recruiting, but just in general, Rusty Mansell said it on these air, I mean, on this show, and I mean, everybody knows Rusty. He's called Travis Hunter. I said, you know, give me an idea about his skill set, and he said Champ Bailey. And he said offense and defense. And then he added, he said Travis Hunter is so committed to Florida State, he said that's a wrap. It's done. He's recruiting other kids. It's over. There's another 5-star that's committed, Sam McCall, a kid from Lakeland, and my understanding is that this may just be a commitment of convenience. Do you have any understanding on that, or that this is just something to say right now?
you know, definitely the Travis Hunter definitely is the one that, you know, appears to be in cement. You know, FSU fans, because of the way the last few years have gone, are still going to be a little bit of concern just because of how the team has played. They're going to be afraid that they might lose him. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, what Rusty says is accurate. He seems 100% locked in, just like Derwin James was coming out of high school a few years ago, where nobody could sway him. Sam McCall is a guy who actually committed to Florida. They made a change on their coaching staff. And he kind of opened things up, and he jumped right into Florida State. So that one is, Florida State's thrilled to have him, and they're hoping that they can keep him. But he is a guy that's been a little bit more fluid with his recruitment, and that probably could continue.
Still a lot of work to do. Sounds like with him, mama, the uncle, the cousin, the coach, everybody you can, man. You get a 5-star like that, no doubt about it. Ira, appreciate the time, amigo. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care.
All right. Ira Schoffel, always a great job there coming on. I appreciate him. Again, warchant.com, managing editor there. And it's interesting that it is sort of a not follow the crowd, but maybe follow Travis Hunter. Okay, yeah, maybe I'll commit there as well. I always say this. No matter who the kid is, no matter who the program is, you'd rather have it. But right now, all Sam McCall committing to Florida State does is let all the other schools know who they need to recruit against. You'd rather have it. But it's just that it went from everybody's offered Sam McCall to I'm a Florida State commit. And now you know who to negative recruit. Now you know who to take those slings and arrows again. I remember Mark Rick saying that. We were at Media Days one year, and he's like, the commitment is great, but suddenly it's the bullseye on you. Whereas there's a kid who's got, you know, 70 offers and, you know, almost every SEC school, and except the ones who know they can't get him. Everybody else is trying to throw their hat in it. And he's like, when they commit, he's like, it's great, but you got a whole lot of work to do, and that's Florida State right now with Sam McCall. All right, we're going to take a break, wrap up hour one next.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. And I was watching SEC Rewind over the weekend, and it reminded me of what's true about almost every Southern fan base, at least. And I mean this with respect, because, I mean, there's one. There can only be one, really. You don't have to be especially good as an announcer to be the voice of and fill in whatever fan base, school, team, program. You don't have to be especially good to wind up the voice of the Tigers, Bulldogs, Commodores, whoever, any team, any conference, especially in the South, deeper in the South, the better. You don't have to be good. You just have to be completely ours. And without question, ours. SEC Rewind. We all know what that is. SEC Rewind on the SEC Network, where they put together about a two-hour broadcast. It's a pretty good dissection of classic SEC games or maybe bowl games. And I've been lucky enough at Media Days, they asked me to do commentary on a lot of them. And so I think three straight Media Days starting in 2014, because the SEC Network debuted in August of 14. And so in July of 14, 15, and 16, I believe those 3 years, they were amping up all their extra programming. And so part of what they did is like, let's take all the great games and we'll replay them with today's commentary. And so I got to be on a lot of them, and they're tremendous. They're so well done. Well, I was watching a couple of them this weekend, and when it's the SEC Rewind, it can be the, like, one of them that was not an SEC game, but it was SEC team. It was Auburn and Texas A&M in the January 1st, 1986 Cotton Bowl. Texas A&M won. There is a lot of the game broadcast, and I think it was from, and this was not what was on last night. I'm purposely not going to name those because I know the guys who are involved here. The Texas A&M Auburn Cotton Bowl that the Aggies won, I think it was 35-16. they have a lot of the broadcast, not only the footage, obviously, but the audio from the CBS broadcast. And again, I think it was Brent Musburger. And over the years, I mean, my gosh, Ara Parsegan would do color. Roger Staubach did color. But Brent was on the mic. And they play a lot of that network broadcast footage. And do you know what you get on the network feed? Sort of unaffected, but a tremendous job. Because when two national announcers are told, we thought you were going to get the Cotton Bowl, but you're going to get the Orange Bowl instead. They are, all right, well, that's the only game I'm doing. So, boom, here we go. And they start studying, and they want to do a great job because they don't know these two teams, or they're doing the Cotton Bowl or the Sugar Bowl or the Peach Bowl or the Independence Bowl or any other bowl. Hey, we're showing up. Let's do a good job on the national TV broadcast. They also include clips of the local, like the each team's radio broadcast with the voice of the whoever, voice of the Aggies, voice of the Tigers. I was watching a game I will not identify. It was a regular season game from this century. I know both guys who were on the call for their respective schools. Neither was informative or insightful. And that isn't the point for an SEC team's announcer, for instance. The point is to sound somewhat like me, to get excited and nervous and unsure and all those things that I am. That's the point. The fact that it's on radio means I don't know, not for certain, what's really going on. And he and I are on this verbal roller coaster together, just hanging on, waiting desperately for each play to unfold. Ball snapped, and then, all right, what's happening? We're here together. Go back and listen to, I don't know, go Google your computer, go to YouTube, wherever, and go type in some of the most well-known college football announcers, not national guys, not folks doing national broadcasts, not Keith Jackson. I mean, he did a tremendous job, and he brought you a lot of that emotion. But he's known a lot for the Alabama broadcast and also some Oklahoma broadcast. He was never confused to be one of those teams' announcers, though. He just did a great job presenting it. When you listen to a team's, the voice of the Volunteers, once that ball is snapped, and it's only on radio, that's the only way it works. If you're really ours and we know it, just talk to us each Saturday for a few hours and you hit the bullseye. I was telling a story, and this is Larry Munson, and I'm not a Georgia fan or a Georgia grad, but this is just a story that it kind of encapsulates it. It was, and you go back and find the date, it was 2006. I was in Clemson because North Carolina was playing Clemson that day, and it was the day they decided to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the 81 national championship team there. And I want to go see Danny Ford. It's one of my favorite people in college football. And so I was there. I wanted to see the game, but the way the schedule laid out, it was the early game, and there was so much later, and I'm only like 2 hours from home. So I was like, all right, I got the rundown for halftime. Because I wanted to see the game. I want to see North Carolina. How do they look? Clemson, et cetera. I wanted to talk to Danny Ford and some of the other players from the 81 team and get some sound. Play on the show Monday. After halftime, I spent about 10 minutes with Danny Ford. He is one of the nicest people. Accommodating does not describe it properly. I got a buddy of mine named John who is a graduate of Clemson. He's a couple years older than me. 3 years older. And true story, hand of the Lord, folks. I texted John a couple of years back to get in touch with Danny Ford because I had lost his number when I switched from my Windows phone to my Motorola phone. And I didn't have Coach Ford's number anymore. Oh, so is your friend in media? Or does it? No. He's a Clemson grad who, after a game, stopped at the Esso Club, saw Danny Ford, just say, Coach, I just want to say I appreciate everything you did. Just want to shake your hand. They start talking. He's like, well, John, you ever want to call? Here's my number. A guy he had never met in his life who is just a Clemson fan said, I don't want to bother you. I don't want to bother you. Here's my phone number. Here's my cell phone number. So I texted my buddy John to get Danny Ford's number. He's just such good people. Last time I interviewed him, his wife had to call him in off the tractor. He was out, I'm sorry, he was repairing a tractor. Had to call him into the house, whatever. Just a really good guy. So I talked to him about 10 minutes. I'm heading back to back home to go about the rest of my college football day. I'm like, what can I pick up on the radio? Well, you know, if you're a Hartwell, you're kind of North Georgia-ish, whatever. I pick up the Georgia game. And it's the day that Colorado was in Athens. And Joe Cox came off the bench to lead that comeback. I'm not kidding, folks. You get on 85 South out of Clemson, at least you can go south back roads and get on like exit 1 or 2. I go to exit 19. It's easy. It's one turn. Exit 19 to the South Carolina-Georgia border. I didn't know who had the ball. I didn't know what the score was. I got a lot of we and us and them. We need this. I'm like, do we need to get the 4th-and-1 or stop the 4th-and-1? I never got an update. Wouldn't have changed a thing. Would not have changed a thing. Like I said, I ain't a Georgia fan. Everybody has their announcer, and it's not because they're particularly good. Like Eli Gold, you can't do a more professional, better job than Eli. That ain't why Alabama fans love Eli. He's ours. That's what they think. LSU fans, he's ours. Arkansas fan, he's ours. Clemson, Wake Forest, North Carolina. That's what all you want to know. You don't have to do a great job. Just let us know you're ours.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.